Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and the iHeartRadio app. To interact with the show, call us at 859-280-2287. That's 859-280-CATS. Or you can tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome to the Big Blue Insider on another nice day, Friday, as we wrap up the week. Really, it's been great in terms of weather all week long. Got the garage door open again, and we have room for you at 280-2287, 800-606-4263, or tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Going to talk a lot of football tonight. We'll talk a lot of stuff in general. But two former Kentucky players, they're still Wildcats. Anthony White, we haven't chatted with Ant B for a while. You hear him every Sunday on Sunday Morning Sports Talk, but we like talking football with him as well. And he today played in the Kentucky NFL Hall of Fame golf tournament, so we'll get a chance to find out what that was like, how he played, and some of the guys that he hung out with. That's always a good time, seeing a lot of the former Kentucky players, not just the guys who played or coached in the league, coming back. And then coming up in our second hour, Braxton Kelly. And Braxton, you recall, played for Rich Brooks, is a LaGrange, Georgia product, just like Wesley Woodyard. And Braxton made the most important tackle in the history of then Commonwealth Stadium, and to this day, the stadium now known as Kroger Field. What tackle is that, you're asking yourself? That was the tackle that ended the game when the Cats were playing LSU. LSU needed a first down to stay alive in overtime and try to at least tie the game. And Braxton Kelly read the play properly and made the tackle about a yard shy of the first down. So Stevie Johnson catches the touchdown pass. Lonis Sieber kicks crucial field goals. But it was Braxton's tackle that ended things. So we'll talk to him. He is now a coach after a brief career in the National Football League. So that'll be a lot of fun as well. Billy Rutledge alongside. We may hear from Aaron if he's not too busy. But a little bit of news to share with you here on this Friday afternoon. Kentucky softball star Erin Kuffel, who's now a sophomore, but just finished up her first year, has been named to the USA Under-18 national team. That was announced this afternoon. She will play in Lima, Peru on between August 28th and September 5th, and in the Junior Pan Am Games in Colombia in the first week of December. So you've got the World Cup in Lima, and then you've got the Pan Am Games in Colombia. So she's going to be busy this fall. She had 337 this year as a rookie. She was the two-time Indiana Player of the Year before signing with the Wildcats. She was rated, in one service, the seventh best player in America. So she's one of the highest rated players ever to be signed by Rachel Lawson. 16 home runs this year, by the way, and knocked in 56. She led Kentucky in both of those categories. And in fact, I didn't realize this until the NCAA tournament, but she was the first true freshman ever to start at shortstop for Rachel Lawson. That's 14 years. Second team all conference, SEC all freshman, second team all region, and now she is an all-star. So, congrats to her. Three Wildcats, Desiree Bryant, Shaquila Saunders, and Olivier Groover, have advanced during preliminary rounds at the U.S. Olympic team trials in track and field. Bryant won the NCAA's 200-meter championship as a senior in 2015, and she really turned in a good time today in qualifying. Groover is a pole vaulter, and she won the NCAA's in 2018, and she is qualified. And then Saunders was an NCAA indoor long jump champion. So they're going to move on. Congrats to them. This is the Children's Charity Golf Tournament weekend, and the tradition is that at the beginning of the tournament, Doug Flynn, Johnny Bench, Matthew Mitchell, the three co-chairs, present the check from last year's earnings to this year's tournament chairman. And last year we raised almost $320,000.
That's awesome.
Isn't it great?
That's awesome.
For Children's Charities of the Bluegrass, over 41 years, $15 million total. And here's the cool part. To me, the best part is the celebrities. And granted, back in the day, you could get what you might call, you know, the super A-list celebrities to come to town. Now, there's a charity golf tournament every weekend, and they pay appearance fees. You know, we would pay, and I say we because KYT was a big part of it, and, you know, and I was part of the television coverage for many, many years. We fly people in, cover their expenses, and, you know, hotel rooms and everything were graciously donated, but we never paid appearance fees because we wanted every dime possible to go to the kids. And so many of the celebrities, when they found out and were actually, they had a chance to, you know, take a tour of a hospital or whatever, they were more than happy to appear without an appearance fee. And in fact, many of them have told us, especially the people from sports, but some from entertainment, told us that, well, when Doug Flynn calls, I come running. When Johnny Bench calls, I come running. And there are other people who have charity golf events, and Doug plays in those. So it's like, you play in mine, I'll play in yours. And for all the years I worked at KYT, I was really proud to be a part of that. So, Billy, they need to invite you. You're a celebrity.
Yeah, that's right. You know, all the with the name, image, and likeness news today, Dick, I saw some college kids tweeting out that they're available for endorsement opportunities. Well, I just want to get that out there. I am also available for endorsement opportunities.
Mitch Barnhart talked about the NIL situation today. Of course, that news breaking yesterday, and we'll have some comments from Mitch coming up in our next segment. Nothing new, nothing earth-shattering, but well, his basic message was, look, we're just getting started. There are a lot of questions. There are a lot of issues, and it's, you know, a process, not to be stealing from the Philadelphia 76ers, but it's going to take a little while to figure this out. And they've already been at work trying to figure this out because people, we've known this was going to happen for quite some time. So we'll hear his, like I said, his comments coming up in just a few minutes. Interesting story unfolding in Omaha, site of the College World Series, where right now Vanderbilt leads NC State 3-1. It's an elimination game for Vandy. Commodores have lost one game. They've won two. State has won a couple of games and has yet to lose, but is trailing 3-1, bottom of the eighth, with one on and one out. The story is COVID ripped through the NC State team over the last 48 hours. I think you're allowed to take 35 players, maybe 36, to the College World Series to dress that many players. Not allowed to dress that many in conference games, but hey, College World Series. Somehow COVID takes hold, and NC State today was able to dress 13 players for today's game. That's how many players are on a Little League team.
That's insane.
Isn't that wild? The game was delayed for about an hour. They issued a statement saying an undisclosed number of players have been put into protocols and will be unavailable for today's game. So you had one play, at least one player tested positive. They didn't say who it was or define whether they were out because of a positive test or simply exposure. Unclear how long any quarantine would last. ESPN reported that it was their second baseman, JT Garrett, saying he was no longer with the team. And earlier this week, the coaches said Jared and others had shown symptoms of illness. He said this bug seems to be floating around. So NC State, which beat Vandy 1-0 on Monday, what a game that was. The defending champion, Vanderbilt, which won in 2019, it's the last time they played. Now they're trying to knock them off again, and they've had their opportunities. In the seventh NC State loaded the bases, but batter popped out. Now they got two on. They got the tying run on base, but they just haven't been able to bring him around. Kumar Rocker started the game, but he left in the seventh. So it's up to the bullpen for Vandy. But at any rate, they've got a converted first baseman playing pitcher playing first base. They slid their third baseman over to shortstop. The previous inning, he committed an error, but they survived it. So they got a backup playing third base, and yet they're giving Vandy everything they want. But I cannot imagine. And here's the thing, Billy. How much did we talk about this with regard to the NFL season? You know, or college football season. You know, they called off games, they paused games. But we really talked about the NFL. What if a team has somebody turn up positive and can't field an entire roster?
Right. I mean, this has been a concern, not just this coming year, Dick,
yeah,
but the entire last year,
exactly,
when we tried to navigate these waters.
Exactly.
You know, we've also had discussions about making the vaccine mandatory and, you know, if that would be the best case scenario.
Yep.
If this is the flip side of it, you're going to have some people get the vaccine, some people not, and you're going to put the entire team in jeopardy of having to forfeit,
yeah,
by not getting the vaccine. So,
yeah, and the other question is, how did it happen? Well, families are there. I don't know if, you know, after games, players are allowed to mill about with relatives. Yeah, there's no way of knowing, you know.
Are you surprised they're still testing?
Of course. That they're testing or testing positive?
Well, testing in general, period.
No, you have to test.
Are they testing the fans that come into the stands?
Couldn't tell you, but you can see by flipping on the TV that because I guess so many people haven't vaccinated, you don't see a lot of masks in the stands.
I think people think it's going to disappear since the vaccine is here.
Yeah.
But since not enough people are getting the vaccine,
yep,
the disease is not disappearing.
Yep, that's right. All right, when we come back, Mitch Barnhart with comments on the NIL and what he thinks is going to happen and what he says is going to be kind of a slow, deliberate process, but he sounded like he didn't think it was going to be a return to the Wild Wild West when it came to people throwing money at college athletes. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Anthony White. Hour number two, Braxton Kelly on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
NC State leaves two on. They go to the ninth. Vandy and the Wolf Pack, which is down from 35 or 36 players to just 13, but ain't making it easy. NC State is at runners on in every inning since the second, but they've scored just that one run. So we'll keep you posted. And, again, if Vandy loses, they're out. But, what a story out there in Omaha. Mitch Barnhart talked to the media today via Zoom about the name, image, and likeness, the story that came out yesterday, of course, the governor signing legislation that puts Kentucky on an even par with, I think now it's up to 23 states, and keeps Kentucky competitive in recruiting. And one of the many messages from Barnhart today, hey, look, we're just getting started with this stuff.
Yesterday was the first day, and it sort of gave us the ability to step forward with policies and with procedures. And I think the journey is a long one. We're still awaiting NCAA governance next week. They will probably come through with some new language in some way, shape, or form, uncertain as to what that is. This is a bridge that gets us to January, where we can put the legislation firmly in place through the state legislature in January. And then the last piece, obviously, is the hope that at some point there'll be federal legislation which ties all 50 states together and gives us an opportunity to all sing from one hymn book. So to sit here and say that our parameters today answer all the questions forever would probably be not a great place to start.
And just following up on that, I think people probably assumed that UK would have policies in place to be able to tell players you can do this, you can't do that, this is the way it works, that is still very much under construction. And he mentioned the NCAA, and I'm sure people went, oh, what are you talking about them for? They just got beat, you know. You're talking again about the member institutions who want to basically have some sort of structure when it comes to NIL. They still want to have some sort of level playing field, although that's basically totally impossible in college athletics. But, you know, it's all about competitive advantage and disadvantage. And if you want to, you know, dismiss that, well, think about what if another team that's kicking your butt is able to do things legally that you're not allowed to do. College baseball is a great example. We've talked a lot about the 11.7 scholarships and tuition programs that are available to athletes who play at some institutions but not at others. That's the kind of thing. It's not exactly the same, but that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. I think the other thing people are wondering about is, will athletes base decisions on where they go to school to play strictly on what they can make? And Barnard talked about that a lot. He said he's hoping athletes remember that why you're going is pursue your education. 97% of athletes don't go pro. Get your degree, pursue your athletics, and then think about what you can make on the side.
Those are their two mission statements. And out of those two pieces allows them to have this incredible opportunity to do a third thing, which is monetize some of the things that come with their name, image, and their likeness. And so hopefully we can begin to prioritize those things in some way, shape, or form for our young people to be able to understand how it all comes together in a package. I think there will be opportunities for some young people will be greater than others. And the relationship for all of those folks in a locker room is going to be really, really important to find a way to make sure that you maintain that. And that doesn't become the focus rather than the ability to go out and do something really, really uniquely cool together competitively.
I followed up on that by asking him about concerns of fans who have called our show and talked to me in person, and maybe you, Billy, about the fact that they're concerned recruiting will turn in to a bidding war. And as he points out, look, it's a new paradigm, but he said we're all just hoping that the core values remain the same.
I do believe at the end of the day, we're still a relationship enterprise. If a young person, if the only reason they're coming to an institution is because of their NIL deal or their opportunity to do that, then I don't know where you've established your relationship. The relationship with your coaches, the relationship with the other teammates in your locker room, I hope continue to be first and foremost as we try and build quality departments, all right, and quality teams and have quality experiences. And we're having national championship opportunities like we did in volleyball. I will assure you, our volleyball team was amazing on the court, absolutely incredible, and brought home a national championship to the Bluegrass. And I'm sure that in the back of their minds as they left the court, there was probably a couple of them said, I wonder if my name, image, likeness would. But that when they took the court, that wasn't their first thought. Their first thought was, how do we raise a trophy for each other? And I hope that that continues to be the reason that we choose and the reason that we play and the reason that we compete together and we join together in locker rooms is that relationship and the ability to share moments that are incredibly special. But out of that, we are allowed to have unique opportunities that avail themselves because of what we do. And so we're a relationship, team-oriented thing that I enterprise that I hope continues to be the reason that we have people that want to be a part of our program.
Let's not kid ourselves, Billy. There will be some people not coming here, not necessarily just coming here, but other spots where they think, hey, what can I get if I sign here instead of there? But I do think he's right when he says, you know, they need to consider everything.
Yeah, there's always going to be those outliers, especially as we begin this new journey.
Oh, yeah.
How many times did he say, we don't know everything that's going to happen? Mm-hmm. So hopefully they can establish a culture in which the decade that follows will be one that's prosperous.
We'll talk more about this in the minutes to come, but up next, Anthony White, Sunday Morning Sports Talk, and one of the best players from the Hal Mumme era, really from UK football, is coming up next.
You're listening to Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Billy Rutledge on a breezy Friday. I don't know if that's good for the golf game or not when you're Anthony White, who is playing with the a lot of former Wildcats at the Kentucky NFL Hall of Fame outing today, put on by Frank Minifield. And B, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. A little sunburnt, but good.
Did the wind help your game at all or hurt you?
Well, for 17 holes, it felt like the wind was in my face the whole time, so I don't know how that happened.
Well, I can't answer that, but I do know that you're a heck of a football player. In fact, Anthony is still number 12 on the career rushing mark. He's number 3 all-time in career receptions, not for running backs, folks, period, behind only Craig Yeast and Derek Abney. And then his 12th in career, I think I lost your number there. Anyway, one of the all-time leaders in receiving yardage, et cetera. And that tells you, of course, what kind of offense Kentucky ran back when Anthony was there, and that is incorporating the running backs, not just running the ball, but throwing the football. And, Anthony, I'm wondering, when you heard that, and I know you've talked about this on Sunday morning, but when you heard Kentucky went out and got an NFL assistant to design a new offense, did your mind immediately go to how much will they throw to the running backs?
No, but looking at with the Rams, the offense the Rams ran with the style of running backs they had early before he left, and some of the other guys, you have to be able to catch the ball. And nowadays, and at the next level, you have to be able to catch the ball anyways. So I was not assuming that NFL coach was going to throw the ball to the running backs too much. That's why they pay their receivers so much, so they don't have to. But it is so much money involved in quarterbacks at the next level. The running backs have to be able to catch the ball as a safety net, which I did most of my career.
But you were a favorite target of Tim Couch. In fact, when you left the SEC, you were among the all-time top five all-around backs or all-around players in the history of the league. So obviously that helped you get a taste of the NFL. So what do you expect from this new offense?
I expect it to be pretty decision-made where I thought a black and white. I think the offense or the team, the fans will know what's expected to happen, and I think it'll make film study easier. I think it'll make correcting problems easier. Where before, the read options were more you reacting off the defense, and you take what the defense gives you, and the quarterback, the running back, and the receivers all have to be on the same page at the snap, at the snap of the fingers when the outside backer or the defensive end comes upfield or crashes hard. The quarterback has to be able to read that. The running backs have to be able to read that as well as the receivers, which there's too many moving parts. I think now is black and white. We're going to play action depending on the defensive set. You know, we hand the ball off to Chris Rodriguez. He may get the ball 30 times some game. But then other times when they want to stack the box, the play action, I don't think the defense has enough time to react to deciding if Chris Rodriguez is getting the ball. And the quarterback, whoever that is going to be, pulling the ball up, and the receivers already know the ball is coming after the play action. I think it's easier to determine where the ball is going to go, so I think that'll make it easier for the quarterbacks to decide what their options are.
Now, I know you can go play action out of the shotgun, but do you prefer a mix of the quarterback being under center? Would you rather they be in the shotgun entirely? What's your preference on that?
I think for the things that the type of offense we have, I would like for them to be under the center more. I think it's hard for the defense to read whether it's handoff or the play action is tougher to read under center because after two steps, you don't know if the quarterback has handed the ball up to the running back or not, or if the running back is still in play action mode. So the safeties probably hesitate for another second or two. In shotgun, they know within their first read step whether or not the running back is running the ball or something. So I think under center is harder for the defenses to determine whether it's play action or if it's actually a real run. It's easier to read and shotgun, although the shotgun is easier for the quarterback to keep an eye. As my partner always reminds me, when you're running play action, the quarterback at some point has to turn his back to the defense.
Yeah.
So as tricky as some of these SEC defenses are, if the quarterback doesn't trust what he's seeing on pre-snap, it could make it tough on them. So I think there may be instances when you're playing exotic defense, we may have to stay in the shotgun. So that way the quarterback's not taking his eyes off the defense. They can't do any trickery with your back to them. But I think we can establish a lot just by having the quarterback under the center and handing off to Chris Rodriguez and making the defense, you know, try to find the ball and at least take a couple more read steps, which would give us better passing lanes.
Anthony, there's a lot of excitement around Wandale Robinson, and rightly so. But what does Wandale's presence do for the rest of the offense? How much is it going to help Josh Ali that he's got such a talented guy alongside him?
I mean, one thing, as Dick was talking about earlier, you know, you catch a lot of footballs, and I was at one point in time, I was only behind Craig East. And Craig knew that if he didn't get open on his route, it was getting checked down to me most of the time. That's why he commented, well, I was one of the favorite targets, because if no one was open, he'd know I was always going to be open. But I also knew that if Craig caught the ball, I can get downfield and get a block, because he's going to make one guy miss. I just go for the safety. The cornerback is going to miss him, so I'm just going to the safety as soon as he catches it. So I think that's kind of when you see Wandale having success, and then, you know, maybe cheating the safety over a little bit more, or once Wandale goes in motion and, you know, the linebackers and the safeties are trying to decide who's going to pick him up and the defense get adjusted, you have to be, as a secondary receiver, you have to be able to get open to keep the defense honest. You're going to get a lot of one-on-one coverage. You're going to get a lot more opportunities. But I think the biggest thing having Wandale over there, knowing that he's going to make a lot of plays, if you want to get the ball, you're going to have to get open. You're going to have to get some separation. You have to run crisp routes every time, which I don't think we did last year a whole lot of times. I'm not sure if we were running full speed on routes a lot of times.
Wow. You were talking about defenses doing exotic sorts of things. How much has that advanced? How much has that developed since you played in the SEC? I got to think that, you know, D coordinators have turned over quite a bit since you played, and I got to think that there's a lot more trickeration going on.
Yeah, when I played, we probably Joe Lee Dunn will come out in the UFO defense where there's eight linebackers and four defensive backs on the field, no defensive linemen. That was probably the most exotic. But now even ours are really not exotic. But I think the SEC is so athletic. If you think about a guy like Jamin Davis standing on the edge, you don't know if he's going to rush. In my day, if he's coming off the edge, I'm like, if this guy comes, I'm either going to block him one, I'm going to chip him and be hot. Or if he tries to guard me, as good as he is, I feel like I'm going to win that battle just because I think he's a little bit bigger than I am. I think I'm a little more shifty. So that's where the exotic part comes in. You got a guy that you don't know if he's going to blitz. And even if he drops in the coverage, he's athletic enough to still cover your tight end and your running back. So it's not so much exotic by the type of things that Joe Lee Dunn did, but it's exotic to when you overload a side, you have guys so athletic playing certain positions that it makes you think twice about what your options are after play action or handing the ball off, especially in the read option.
Anthony, is momentum a real thing?
Yeah, I do think momentum is a real thing. I played against Vanderbilt a couple times. We were a lot better than they were, man, but they start believing in themselves. They tip a ball here or break an extra tackle. I think momentum is a huge thing, and that was – when it was on our side last year, you could really tell, kind of like the Tennessee game where everybody was getting a piece of them. Maybe Mississippi State, the getting was good. But then there were other games like Missouri where we need to pick up a third down, and it just keeps stalling. Yeah. When you don't pick up third downs, that's why I'm huge on third down conversions, because that usually dictates the momentum on offense. If you can pick up the third down, that deflates the defense some and keeps the drive alive. And on defense, if you can get off the field on third down, you know, you get to get some rest and you've done your job.
Anthony, how much does a crowd impact that momentum swings?
I've always thought that I was in the zone when I was on the field. And at times you can hear them, especially on pre-snap on fourth and inches or goal line plays or something like that late in the game. But after watching last season's game and, you know, you see big plays and you don't really hear the crowd roar, just listening to it as a fan, I think it's huge. I think it's huge. I mean, a couple games when we had a lot of interceptions, you know, our crowd does a good job of getting together, banging on the bleachers and making some noise. But I think it's going to be even bigger this year coming back from, you know, the fans being off full capacity for half a year. Now you're getting to do the stranger high fives. You got a whole section high five and cheering together. Until last year, I think I underestimated the impact of it. I knew if there was influence on certain points. But until last year, I think I underestimated the impact.
You got to play in a couple of bowl games. Unfortunately, Kentucky didn't win either one. But Kentucky comes off a rough year, all-conference games last year, 4-6 in the league, brutal. But plays really well, I thought, and wins the bowl game against NC State. Is it possible for that to create momentum? I know it's been several months and a lot has happened since then and some of those players are gone, but can a program carry that kind of momentum into the next season?
Yeah, I think they can. I think the first year when we did make it to a bowl game and then 97 when we played in the bowl game in 98 when we played in the bowl game, when we didn't make it in 97, I thought the motivation of the games we left on the table in 97 and some of the games we didn't pull through, I think that was more motivation that, you know, we can get back and we can get higher. And if you look at our season last year, I think defensively we played well enough probably to win 9 games. And you know, sometimes in the half we got to staggering, and I don't think the offense helped out enough and the defense got tired out at halftime, so the scores might not indicate that we were in the games. So I think that the biggest motivation is going to be knowing that we got a lot of guys returning from defense. We've lost some, but we got some young talent. We still have depth on defense, and if we can do the same things we did last year, I think the motivation is going to be that now we have a new offense. We have Wandale. Chris Rodriguez is a man by himself. You know what to expect out of him each play. Once we get a quarterback plugged in, I think that the team itself should be extremely excited because we know we played about 25% offense. I think there were some terrible games we played. I don't think we put a whole game together on offense. Now knowing that we got a new system, we got some new players on offense, we got some guys solidified in positions where we don't have to look the field whole, I think that'll be more motivating than winning the bowl game. But I think the bowl game put us in a good spot knowing that it was a big win. But I think any time you play outside the SEC, you're expecting to win anyways.
Yeah.
Anthony, if the one-time transfer rule was in effect when you were playing at Kentucky, was there any a time that you thought that you may have taken advantage of that?
Well, I almost had to take advantage without my input. There was a point where I wasn't on the team in 96 after I had an awful Alabama game, and I was looking to transfer probably back to the Big Ten or whatever. And at that point, Tim Couch was actually looking to transfer too. I think he had enough of running the option. So I think if the transfer portal was there, I probably would have. I think the things that led to me being off the team, I wasn't getting the respect or the reps that I wanted, and I think I should have had to go somewhere else because I think all those stones were overturned. But I definitely think it's good for the kids. And sometimes you pick the wrong school, you don't fit into a system the way they expect you to, and it's, sometimes it's best for the program to bring somebody in that can help you in your system, and as well as good for guys while they're younger to go somewhere where they can help a team out and not have to sit on the bench and have any regrets.
A couple more minutes with Anthony White, and you mentioned the quarterback situation. You're high on the defense, but I would assume that you're not surprised at all, and I know you and Curtis and Larry have talked about it, but I got to think you're not surprised that neither quarterback, and this is not a knock on them, but neither Gatewood nor Allen won the starting job, played well enough to grab the starting job in the spring. New offense, transfer coming in, new OC. I guess we would have been surprised if they had announced a starter, right?
Yeah, I guess the scuttlebutt is that Joey kind of beat out both for the position. Like you said, there was never a starter. But it seems that that Joey's over Bo on the depth chart. I think it just says how much respect or anticipation they have for Will Levis coming in and seeing what he's going to do. Because I don't like the fact that if we have to, if Will is what we think he is or what Liam thinks he is, and it works out, that's fine. But if he doesn't and we come out of spring with two guys that you didn't want to name the starter, now I may not be as excited as I was last year. But you know me, I always like to give a nod to a starter just so he can start preparing and the team can start, you know, polishing up and grooming for the season.
They have to take some precautions, I know, but for the most part, it looks like summer workouts, you know, the independent workouts where the coaches aren't around, plus summer camp, will go back to being fairly normal, Anthony, which means a lot of bonding that goes on. You know, you players like to get together on your own and lift and throw and things like that. Couldn't do that. Nobody could do it last year, but do you remember how vital that can be to a team?
Yeah, extremely vital, especially on the offensive side. I mean, we practice right after lifting weights, and we go to the indoors. We probably 5 days a week, we probably ran a pass skeleton. And if we had enough defensive players, they always wanted to come out. So outside, after practice, we probably, especially in the offseason, we probably did 5 days a week of at least an hour and a half or 2 hours of pass scale. And, you know, the timing was on point.
Yeah.
We know where to expect each other at. We, you know, we knew what each other can do. We knew where the ball was going to be delivered. It made our offense really precise. So I think it'll be more a bigger influence on the offense this year having those opportunities.
Yeah, I don't remember. It may have happened, but I don't remember you having to reach behind you on a swing pass from Tim Couch ever at all. I mean, it seemed like he always put it right in stride, and that's not an accident, is it?
Oh, no. He's so accurate. If someone's coming from my right, he'll throw it on my left. If I'm wide open, he'll throw it right in the middle of my chest. If somebody, the linebacker or safety, is coming to head hunt me from behind, he'll throw it around my shins or something. So if it's low, I know he's throwing it low. So you better get down and don't get your head taken off. But he's that accurate. He will throw the ball to tell you where the defense is coming from.
Well, maybe we'll see that this coming year, and we'll know before long. It's coming at us fast, and when it does, Anthony White will be there to talk about it on Sunday Morning Sports Talk with Curtis and Larry and anybody else who jumps in. Thank you, sir. I'm glad you had a good time today playing golf.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad to shake the rust off.
Have a good one. We'll see you down the road.
All right, I'll see you.
That's Anthony White. Aunt B, they called him. Why? We still don't know. Tim Couch came up with a nickname. It stuck, and that's what he is. And we're back in a minute on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to Anthony White for joining us. Just a couple of minutes here, but you could tell how excited he was about the prospects of this new offense. Billy, as much because of what it represents as what they didn't get done last year.
Yeah, I think we were all a little disappointed last year in the 10-game SEC season. But look, a new offense with an NFL guru, a schedule that lets you warm up a little bit with some of the cupcake games, I think Kentucky can get back on track to another successful, maybe a close to a 10-win season again, if they can take care of business at the early part of their schedule.
You know what's going to be so interesting about that early schedule, as you said, is if you want to call it a cupcake game, a winnable game, whatever, but the second game of the year is a conference game. And it's so great that it's a cliche, yet it's true, that every team in America that's worth anything improves mightily from week one to week two thanks to video. Thanks to the fact that every coach that's worth his weight in gunpowder, in anything, can look at video, he and his staff, and learn from it and teach players from it. So they'll have the opportunity to, especially with this new offense, to teach from it, because it's not the same, as anybody knows. It's not the same as going, you know, 11-on-11, good on good, as they say, in practice. So that's going to be really that week between the first and second game. People talk about that four-game stretch, and it is vital in the middle of the season. But that second week of practice after the opener, assuming they win, even well, especially if they lose it, but going into the Missouri game, that is going to be crucial. Because you can't lose that game, in my opinion.
A night game at 7:30. Also, against the team that, you know, was a bad loss last year.
Oh,
that was just
the worst.
You've talked about how much you hated the trip, the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. The COVID trip.
Right, yeah.
But I mean, I know what it was like standing there on the sideline, you know, and there's not much of a crowd, and, you know, and Kentucky just as a team that was just – it just wasn't in the game. I can't imagine what it was like for folks listening and watching at home. Do you remember?
I do. There was like a 17-play drive to start the third quarter.
Oh,
or something
my
like
God.
That ended
was terrible.
In 0 points, and that's when I was upset that I was watching this game.
And then they couldn't get the ball back. They could not get the ball away from Missouri when they had to. So, that second game, conference opener, a team, they owe Missouri. They owe Missouri big, and I don't know anything about Missouri yet. Got my Phil Steele book, so I'll be studying up soon. But and he likes Kentucky's chances at a good year this year, by the way. But, we will turn that over a lot, I know, this summer. Braxton Kelly's next. He knows something about big plays.